So did you see that they changed the kickoff for NFL? Have you seen this?
I did see that. I definitely saw it.
So what do you think? I mean, is this a good? I didn't know. I thought at first when I saw them grouped up together that there was some kind of a waltz going on, dance.
I think they're just going to continually change that until the point where they're actually cuddling and spooning at the 50-yard line, and then they'll kick the ball off.
The Macarena at midfield. The Macarena at midfield. That's the new kickoff.
That's the new kickoff.
Hey, I'm in. I'm sold.
Just remember, everybody, when your story to tell, tell it well. Of this old marketing move.
And now, for your listening pleasure, here's Polizzi and Rose, covering the week of media, marketing, and digital content news. This old marketing. Take it away, boys.
Well, hello, friends, and welcome to This Old Marketing, proudly brought to you by the HubSpot Podcast Network, the audio destination for business professionals. And I'm Robert Rose, and welcome to episode number 421 for Friday, March 29th, 2024. And with me, as always, is my pal, my colleague, and a guy whose interpreter doesn't have access to his bank account, Mr. Joe Polizzi.
Are you speaking of Mr. Otani?
Is that who you speak? Yes. Have you kept up with this? This is.
I heard that. That there was some. What the interpreter got in debt for $4 million, something like that. Is that right?
That's right.
Do you know what the bets were? Because I don't know the details of like what is this online sports betting? Is this something different? Do you know?
I don't think they're saying as yet. The investigation, as they say, continues. but almost assuredly, it was sports betting because. It's Vegas. I don't think he's making any, put calls on some company, called Truth Social or something.
It could be like Baccarat. It could be blackjack, right? It sounded like it was online sports betting.
I'm pretty sure they're going to come out that it was online sports betting for sure. And, I'm not sure. The fascinating thing to me was there's all these, conspiracy theories going around. And by the way, for those of you who don't know and don't follow American baseball, Shohei Ohtani, a pitcher.
Generational talent.
Generational talent is exactly right. And for the Los Angeles Dodgers, he plays the baseball for. And he signed a deal with the Dodgers for, what was it,
$700 billion.
Right. $700 million, I think, or something crazy. It's an absurd number.
I think it was in bullion, gold bullion.
Exactly. It's in Bitcoin or something. And so
he's a 10% owner of all the Bitcoin in the world.
He is a very rich man at this point. But in any event, he doesn't speak any English. And so he has an interpreter that sort of follows him around everywhere in press conferences and basically everywhere and dugout. He's this, and the thing that I was, and he's been accused, of course, of betting on sports and stealing money from Ohtani out of his bank account to actually make up some of his gambling losses. And so it's quite the controversy, as the English might say. And so he, interestingly enough, the fascinating thing to me is the sort of soap opera behind the scenes, because now they're showing like that Ohtani knew during one of the games, and they show him speaking with his interpreter and slapping him on the back and saying hi, and it's all smiles, but he knew. Sort of like, did he know and was sort of pretending to be nice, or does he in on it, or does he know? There's all these sort of like, when did he know? Who did he know? What did he know? And all of these things are going on in the background.
But it sounds to me like it really does sound to me that, and I don't want to give him the benefit of the doubt, but I am. It sounds like his friend got into some trouble, and Ohtani is being very nice and saying, "Hey, look, dude, I'll bail you out. I have more money than God. I'm happy to bail you out." And of course, he is now sort of implicated with the story because he's helping the guy out.
They've done a nice job on the comms for sure, right? In terms of keeping Ohtani absolutely separate from this whole thing. So it's they've really done a nice job in making sure that this is, it's there, but if you're not paying attention, it's not front and center like you think it might be.
Well, speaking of Ohtani, today, as we are recording this, is the opening day for Major
League
Baseball.
It's opening day.
Now, did you see the stat where they're going to keep the play clock going, the pitch clock, where you have to pitch after, you know,
it's a great rule.
Seconds. It saved 22 minutes a game or something like that in time on average because of, in most cases, this
clock. It's a fantastic rule. Now, the other new rule about blocking the bag, you know, blocking the base.
Yes.
Not as much. Not so much. That is just, it's so silly. That rule is just not.
Is it as silly as the NFL kickoff?
No, it is not as silly as the NFL kickoff.
They should just get rid of the kickoff.
They should.
Just get rid of it. The problem is that you have to keep the onside kick in or something like it because you want that. What that scenario is if somebody's far behind so they can sort of catch up. It never happens, but some cases you have the opportunity.
Well, they were actually looking at changing that too, right? They were looking at changing the onside kick to where it was something like they would line up a little differently, a little further back, but that the team would have to declare it. In other words,
you have to, almost like a 2-point conversion. You have to declare.
That's right. And so you can't surprise people with it.
I declare a 2-point conversion. But you have to say it like that. And if the umpire is not convinced that you tried, you just got
to do a regular
kickoff.
I do declare.
Anyways, what else is going on? Before
rip apart
the show.
There is a really interesting thing we should talk about before we get to what we're going to talk about on the show, which is, did you see that there's some stat that I think it was eMarketer or something that basically said about content creators and how they make their money?
I have that. You want me to see if
I can? Yeah, put it up so that we can actually see it.
Put it on the board. And there it is. Hey, look at how we had this just ready to go.
Right.
Do you want to describe? Well, I'll describe it real quickly.
Yeah, you do. Yeah.
So basically, it's a stat from eMarketer. It says how creators make money. And eMarketer projects $13 billion on social media this year, up 17% from 2023. But here's the issue that I have, and I want to get your take on it.
Yeah.
So they said, okay, the where creators are making the most money, number one, sponsored content. Number two, payouts from the platform, which, okay, that's fine.
Yep,
three, affiliate content. Four, merchandising, subscriptions, tipping or gifting, and then other, whatever other is. Here's what I'm now.
It's your OnlyFans revenue model.
That would be tipping or gifting, wouldn't it?
Oh, maybe.
I think that would be under the tipping. But so here's my problem.
My inner 17-year-old has a joke there, but I'm just not even going near it. But yes.
So here's specifically for you, because you're a content creator that's also a consultant. You've got
the whole
fractional CMO thing going on. That would be considered coaching or consulting revenues.
That's right.
Which we found with Tilt research that the number one way that most creators that we're talking to, that we're surveying, they generate revenues through coaching or consulting, but yet they specifically note at the bottom of this that they excluded that.
Yeah.
What? Why?
Why did they? Why did they exclude? Why did they exclude it?
Tell me. Because
I think this gets to something you've ranted on for forever, which is there is a real difference between content entrepreneurs and those that sort of want to be social media stars. Right. So this, I think, captures that social media influencer social media star idea. Right. Because that's what we're really talking about here is how do I make my money off of basically distribution of me, right, across social media. And it's my thinking and it's what I like and it's what I love. And it's, you know, me in front of a cool vacation spot that you'll never go to. And it's, you know, it's that it's not really what you call the content entrepreneur. I mean, I know subscriptions are in there, but
I don't even see books here. That's right. Another huge revenue source for creators,
right. You know, or, you know, access to education or those kinds of things. That's probably somewhere
training,
in subscription.
No training.
Well.
Yeah. With training be under, you know, subscriptions. I don't know.
So it doesn't take into account the full business, the content entrepreneur business. It only takes into account sort of the social media star. You know, which is, you know, whatever. It's yet again, just another sign that the, you know, there's so much that media doesn't understand how the content creator economy really works. They only see it based on the sheen of what happens at that very top layer of the Facebook, Meta, Instagram, you know, thing.
But
YouTube.
It's not like it's a misunderstanding of the business model, because they purposely removed it. So initially, they understand that there are other revenues coming in, but why then go out to the media and say, this is what creator revenue looks like, instead of what it should be, is you have a huge number for consulting, coaching, mentoring. Then you have sponsorship advertising. Then you have books. Then you have training. And then you have all the other stuff. It's almost like,
I don't think they're talking to those people, though. That's the thing. I don't think they're.
This was promoted in Information Week. Granted, I mean, I don't have anything against Information Week and what they do with the creator economy, but most often they're talking about influencers, to your point.
Exactly.
They're not talking about what we see as, first and foremost, you are an entrepreneur, you are launching a business, and that business happens to be built around an audience where you deliver regular content to and then monetize because you have that relationship with them.
It's a whole strata, right? There's a whole, you know, like if you look at that strata of, you know, the Mr. Beasts, the Kim Kardashians, any of the Kardashians, those,
all the Kardashians,
hashtag all the Kardashians,
Kanye, Tristan Thompson,
all those people who are making their money, the bulk of their money from, what would be called being a social media influencer, right? With a giant audience online that is not an owned media audience for the most part. It is basically a social audience, and how they're making their, you know, because they're the ones that are hitting the headlines, right? That's the one that gets mainstream news. It's the one that hits, you know, it's the ones that get pulled into mainstream media to try and leverage, you know, the Casey Neistats of the world, you know, and so on and so forth. All of those are the quote unquote influencers. And that's really what they're talking about here, is the influencer economy, not the creator economy.
You're right. I mean, that's the one of the reasons why we've been pushing this idea of the content entrepreneur. Because when somebody says, hey, what's a content creator? I would say, I don't know. My mom's a content creator. She posts on Facebook.
That's right.
I know all kinds of people that post all over the place. They're creating content, but are they in a business doing this? No, not at all. And then the influencers, it's almost, you're thinking more about the celebrity aspect of it and less about the actual, hey, I'm financially independent, because this is how my business runs.
It's exactly right. I mean, you have, you know, the for example, just as a quick example of this, in that study that you just showed, I'm sure that somebody like, so, and I know you're not on TikTok, but one of the biggest sort of rising stars on TikTok right now is this, it's a woman who worked for a Chick-fil-A, and she made a really funny face during a video that she was making. She's a content creator. And made a funny face during a social media sort of, you know, just making content for fun on social media. That goes viral. And now she's a content creator. And now she's doing, you know, she's got a whole channel. She's got a whole thing. And she's, you know, she's.
Does she still work at Chick-fil-A?
I don't know. I would assume so. But basically, she's really trying to take advantage of the fact that her one video went completely viral and is now a content creator, right? That's what we're talking about here.
No offense, but does she create content on Sundays? I have no problem with it. I just wonder because that's the thing. Okay, before we get on to the news,
yes.
This is the last, we have to tell everyone, this is the last chance that you can be part of our contest to be on This Old Marketing Live at Content Entrepreneur Expo, May 5th.
Why is it the last chance?
Because
we're a month and a half away. What the hell?
You want to extend it out?
I don't know. I'm just saying. I mean, I don't know.
You want to extend it
complex Byzantine machinations that Tilt Publishing has to go through to get CEX. I mean,
there's a math formula that has to happen.
I see. I see.
To choose this. Okay.
So or are you just creating digital scarcity? You're just creating digital scarcity.
So here's what we're going to do. I'm going to say right here, it's the last chance, but then maybe I'll promote it again next time.
Okay.
Fantastic. Whatever. No, the one reason is because spring pricing is over.
Oh.
At this weekend. For sure this weekend, it's going up $100. So if you use TOM, TOM100, you'll get $100 off. You'll also get $100 off because spring pricing is going up next week.
Then
if you register using that discount code at cex.events, you will get put into a drawing where you have an opportunity to be our special guest at the opening reception of CEX. It's going to be a lot of fun. You get to, I mean, who would want to be on this show?
Who would? Really, who would is the more appropriate question. But
actually, it will tell us more about who submits this. But
it will be funny to look at.
You get to hang out with us. Yeah, it will be so fun. Yeah. And we'll have drinks. We will have drinks.
There's no doubt about that.
During our live shows, there are always drinks. We've never done a live show where there were not drinks involved.
Yeah.
So anyways, go do that. What do we got?
Go do that. We got a great show, a big show, big news this week. So we're going to talk about a few things. The first is we're going to talk about the Florida governor, Boots, I think we call him, Boots McGee. He signed a law restricting social media access for children, and we'll talk about some of the implications. I read the bill, as I usually do, so we'll talk about that. We'll talk about the fact that Truth Social, Donald J. Trump's little social media network, has now gone public and is now a meme stock, and talk a little bit about what that looks like as a social media competitor to X and all the others. Then we'll talk about Spotify, because for content marketing, this is a huge news. Spotify now offers learning courses that you can actually upload and actually become a part of and go learn stuff on Spotify as well, which is really interesting.
Instead of all that stupid stuff you're listening to us, let's go learn something.
Yeah, that's right.
Now stop wasting your time with all that other content.
That's right. You know, we'll talk about print, of course, because this is just show. But there's three surprising trends that have come up recently with regard to print, and we'll talk some of the research there about how print might just be the new Gangnam style of content.
You write that?
I did.
The new Gangnam style.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going old school, baby. We'll talk in our hits and misses about a hit that I've got a little bit from our friends at ComScore. Joe's going to talk a little bit about a YouTube channel that has now taken the direct model movement to another level. And then in Rants and Raves, we'll finish up with my rant on some folks at Accenture and their PR and comms department and Adobe Summit, which is happening literally as we speak. And Joe's going to talk about how Meta needs to step it up. Step it up, folks. Is this all you got? So it's a big show. Big show.
Dare I say, one of our best show lineups ever, at least in the last week.
That's right. It's the most biggest show.
This is the best one we've had for 6 days.
That's right. That's right. And we're all caffeinated, as you can tell. So let's get to our first story here really quickly here. It is coming out of my favorite state of Florida. And the headline here is that Florida governor signs the law restricting social media access for children. Florida Republican Boots Ron DeSantis signed a bill into law basically banning children under 14 from having their own social media accounts on Monday, according to a news release from the governor's office. 14 and 15-year-olds will still be allowed to have accounts with parental consent. In addition to restricting social media accounts for children, the legislation also places a restriction on pornographic websites. We'll talk about that. The bill, known as HB 3, requires age verification for those who visit sexually explicit websites. HB 3 goes into effect on January 1, 2025. So we've got some time to figure stuff out here. The article goes on to just basically say that DeSantis had previously vetoed another version of that it was 16. And now he sort of, I guess, said okay to it being 14 and 15-year-olds. I mean, who cares, really? But I've read the bill. As I said, I've got a take, but I would love to get your take first.
No, before we go on, for those people watching on our YouTube channel, okay, you see his picture, DeSantis?
Yeah. Yeah.
He's saying, "You shall not pass."
I think he's saying, I think actually he's saying, I think he just pooped his pants a little bit. I think he's just, I think that's what he's done there. And he's
thinking about how much he loves Bob Iger and Disney.
There it is.
That's really what it is. That's the number.
They came to agreement, apparently.
They did. That's kind of news of the week as well. And I don't know. I mean, both sides seem to give in a little bit, but there's going to be.
I think Disney went, we're just going to wait this one out. Thank you very much. Yeah. Well, yeah, fine. Whatever you want, Ron, we'll take it. You do you, basically, until somebody else comes along. So
No, I Bob said, we built this city. And then it's like, okay, get out of here. You're gone, man.
Yeah.
I'm a little bit torn because when we talk about regulation and the government getting involved, I'm always like, I don't know which way to do it. I would love to see this effort be led by parental units, but I'm also realistic to know that that will never happen in our lifetime.
Yeah.
So not only Florida, but of course the article talks about there's a number of other states that have these types of bills hanging around. And whether it's 14, 15, 16 seems like the right number for me. I don't know if there's a right, but I would like to see a number where you have to verify your age to get in the car. I'd like to see that happen on every social media site. And God bless Florida if it has to come from them first, your favorite state. But I think it has to happen. Now, I know you believe this probably has bigger ramifications than just minors. You mentioned the pornographic sites or whatever. What do you think? Is this a good thing?
It's a good effort as is usual coming out of Florida. It's an interesting idea that's executed extraordinarily poorly.
You read it. Yeah. So what did it say?
Well, it is as it mostly says, right? Which is basically what the bill says is that if you're under 14, you're not allowed to have one. And by the way, all the social media networks are now required to go delete any account that are clearly of someone under the age of 14. And if you're 14 or 15, then if you get your parents' consent, you can have an account. And by the way, it doesn't mean you can't look at social media. You can't look at all these things. It just means that you can't have an account to actually create stuff. It's basically having an account that actually enables you to do live video, upload pictures, upload text, comment, whatever.
Okay, so I'm let's say you're a 12-year-old. You can get onto TikTok and see the feed, but you can't like anything. You can't create anything.
That is correct.
So it's really not. There's really not a ban in place.
That's right. That's from a usage standpoint, from a consumption standpoint. I mean, you can argue, you know, with X, for example, that, you know, X, I think now doesn't allow you to see much unless you have an account. And so there's that sort of thing. And Facebook, same way. If you don't have an account on Facebook, you can't, you're just not going to do much on Facebook. You can't see very much. But TikTok, you can see a lot without an account. And so that is one aspect of it that I think is really just weird and odd. The other thing is that the second part of the bill that's not getting as much media coverage is, and it got one sentence here that basically says it places restrictions on pornographic websites. It doesn't actually say that. It actually basically says anything that anybody, I mean, and it literally almost says this word for word, anybody of any sort of, any normal person would consider objectionable has to have an age explicit warning on it. In other words, you have to basically put an age gate on anything that would be considered objectionable. That includes violence, it includes sex, it includes very hot political opinions.
They didn't know how to define it, so they did not.
It's the typical with pornographic, yeah, so, right?
They don't basically, I know it when I see it.
That's right. Which, coming from Florida, is pretty rich, I have to say, right about now. So that is going to be problematic, I suspect, at some court level. But I come down when I look at the thing and I say, this would all be solved if they would simply say that you have to verify who you are, right? In other words, you have to be able to identify who you are as a person in order to have an account on social media. That should be the law, as we've talked about many times in the show, because that then gives, and you can say, basically, if you're under the age of X, that, you know, you can then make a law for that, or you could basically say, listen, it's up to the parents, right? It's at, you know, it's PG-13 or it's R or whatever, and you are going to have to make, because once you make the social media companies, all of them, basically verify you as a person, well, now all of the other sort of regulations about content could be put into place very simply, right? In other words, if I'm an underage person, I just don't see that the algorithm works, that I don't see content that is that is objectionable for young people, yep, or that the algorithm is very specifically built for those people versus adults versus, you know, all the things, right? And so I think that's the smarter way to do this. Doing this, to your point, doesn't really make a difference. It doesn't really change things.
You're right, but there's so.
Other than forcing a lot of people who are on, a lot of young people who are on it to get booted off.
Yeah.
And where does that onus in the bill? It basically says the onus is on the social media. So they're all going to have to go, well, you look like you're under 14. You're getting canceled unless you can prove that you're not, right?
Well, I think that this is a stepping stone to where we're going. And in the next couple of years, it'll be full verification to be on any social media platform. And I've already had, I mean, just from what I'm doing, I use Clear to get linked up with LinkedIn. I know. I don't
That's
think
right.
you did that. Did you do that?
Yeah, I did do that.
So I use Clear. So they have my ID. They have my biometrics with LinkedIn. I am that person. I'm also verified on Meta.
Yep,
so I have that. Here. So that's Facebook and Instagram. I pulled off of everything with X and Twitter. So I'm not. But for the most part, you know, I think people like us are getting there, and not maybe for the average user, but we're going that direction. That's the way it needs to be. And if this kind of stuff is going to get us there, then more power to it.
Right. Opinion. So I appreciate the energy the sort of direction here. I just think this is the completely wrong way to go about it, because it's just because
if it was from any other state in the union, you would be singing its praises. But because you have a problem with Florida, for I don't know what, we love our Florida.
Yeah, I mean, to be clear, this was a bipartisan. I mean, you know, as this was not, this is not one side. This is not your typical sort of Florida pushing stuff through on the right. But this is East
Florida and West Florida.
It overwhelmingly passed. So this has been something that everybody seems in Florida to want. Look, to quote a great movie, you know, it's a bold strategy, Cotton. Let's see how it works out for him. You know, I don't think this is going to work out particularly well, but, and the problem with it not working out particularly well is that it ends up sort of taking two steps back for every step forward. It's just, we need national, honestly, legislation that basically makes you say who you are on social media. That would solve so much of this.
And it'll happen. But this has to happen first. It's not going to.
I think you may be right.
It's exactly the same. This is happening right now with marijuana. You're seeing it. You had one state, two states, three states, four states, half the states, and now you're going to get something federally to happen because there's a preponderance of states that are for the use of at least medical marijuana. You're going to see the same thing happen with the social media, privacy, age gates, all this kind of stuff. And then. Yeah. Then the federal government to say, oh, well, most of the states are in on this. Our constituents won't vote us out of office. If we do this, let's go.
That's true.
So there it is.
That's true. Should we cover Truth Social before we do anything else really quickly here?
This is your world. I'm just living in it.
Fantastic. let's cover this real quickly here, because there's not a ton to talk about here, but it is kind of fun and it is interesting. Especially in the world of how we're valuing social media companies these days. So what has happened here is that the SPAC that ultimately sort of absorbed Truth Social went public. And so thus Truth Social being the only company in the SPAC, now Truth Social is basically the representation of the company and has been renamed. It's trading under the ticker symbol of DJT. Very funny. The article that we'll point to here is a couple, one from Axios and one from CBS News. And the Axios article basically talks about how as it is now public, it has become really a meme stock. I mean, it skyrocketed on its first day of trading. It has since come down off of those lofty highs, and some people are predicting that it's going to cut 95%. And basically, as Axios says, the Trump-owned social media platform that started trading yesterday, that was Tuesday, I believe, currently has far fewer users and less income than any social network that has gone public before. While the app does sell some ads, its business is practically non-existent. Truth Social earned $3.4 million in revenue for the first 9 months of 2023, and it lost around $49 million. I mean, even CMI, its height, didn't lose $49 million, which is kind of nice crazy,
example.
Right?
The fact nice that, example.
Well, I was just going to say, Truth Social actually makes much less money than CMI did at its height and is worth, they're saying it's worth $8 billion or something. It's just, it's crazy. It's just absolutely crazy. So, I mean, so what do you think? Yeah.
Well, to sort of play off what you're saying, $3.4 million for a social network
In revenue. Yeah.
Is so incredibly low.
No,
it's better that it'd be zero. It would be almost better because right now, I don't know, it's trading at something like 700 or 800 times revenue.
My God, that's funny.
Which is unsustainable.
Yeah.
So if the stock is, it's absolutely a meme stock. There are people that are buying into this stock that are not looking at any valuation, and this is fine. We're not giving any financial advice or anything like this, but I'm under the assumption that in the next year, the stock won't be at $65.
No, it'll
be something more like $5.
Yeah.
Because you can't sustain it. And it would be different also if there was any kind of statistic, revenue, jump in users that would tell you that the underlying business model is going to grow. It seems like this is it. They've got 5 million. That's about what
they're going to get. Right.
And you're basically going after an audience of sponsors. It's just sponsorship and advertising dollars. And you have a very small group of companies to choose from because for obvious reasons, there's a lot of people that don't want to advertise on that network, and that's fine. That's their prerogative to do that. So this is, we'll look back on this portion of the episode and say, why did we even cover this? But it is in the news this week.
I love that you said that it should be zero. It reminds me so much of I used to have this conversation with a friend of mine, and we used to say to each other, I'd much rather make a zero on a test than like a 30 or a 25, because like a 25 tried. Or a 30 means I tried.
I tried something. Yes, absolutely. It's at $63, $65 right now as we're in the end of March.
Yeah.
By the end of April, by the way, this is not a financial show. Don't take our advice. At the end of April, where is the stock trading?
65. I don't think it moves very much over the next month. I don't think it moves much until the election, to be honest. I think it'll stay pretty. I mean, it'll bounce up and down because it's a meme stock, and so people will be memeing it up and down. But I think as an average, it'll probably stay around the same until after the election. And then once the election is done, I think if things go the way I hope they go, I think the stock takes a huge dive at that.
All right.
Point.
So give me a little leeway. I'm going to give you two answers to this. It's either going to be over 100 or less than 20.
Okay.
There's no in between on this one.
That's right.
It's going to be one or the other.
I mean, if you pick a day, you could be exactly right. But I think if you look at the average over the next 4 to 6 weeks, it's going to stay around where it is. Yeah.
Not much.
It's going to bounce. It's going to be extraordinarily volatile. Let's put it that way.
It really is.
Get into that nonsense if you want to walk into a casino and throw a bunch of money on double zeros. So otherwise I really wouldn't get into that nonsense.
It isn't impressive that Donald Trump's worth is over $6 or $7 billion because of this.
Yeah, but he can't do anything with it. I mean, he can't do anything with that valuation.
Well, you can't, once it goes public, I don't think you can sell shares for 6 months.
Correct. And nor can he borrow against it, is my understanding either. He can't borrow against it. So we'll see.
These are the days of his lives.
Yes, exactly. Speaking of money and seeing our stock rise, we should probably get some revenue in for us and pay some bills.
There we go.
You ever wonder what unicorns eat for breakfast? All right, I don't actually know the answer to that, but what I do know is that 20% of all unicorn startups, they're using HubSpot, and for good reason. HubSpot's all-in-one platform levels up your sales, software, and support. Plus, they have a huge collection of resources to help startups scale, and with HubSpot for Startups program, you can save big off your first year. To see if you're eligible to save on HubSpot, visit HubSpot.com/startups. Want a cool new podcast for your commute? Well, let me give you a nudge. Yeah, that's right, Nudge. Nudge is hosted by Phil Agnew and focuses on how the smallest changes can have the biggest impact. It's a show with simple, evidence-backed tips to help you kick bad habits, get a raise, and grow a business. Every bite-sized 20-minute show comes packed with practical advice from admired entrepreneurs and behavioral scientists. Nudge is fast-paced, but still insightful with real-world examples that you can apply. Oh, and it's also the UK's fastest-growing business podcast. Here's your nudge to get Nudge wherever you follow your favorite podcasts.
Are you familiar with a company called Notch? They help enterprise marketers drive business results with their content. Now, Notch is excited to invite you to their upcoming conference, Content Connect, a conference for enterprise marketing leaders using content to drive business results. You can join speakers from JPMC, Square, and Marriott, as well as your fellow content, digital, and analytics leaders for a day of keynote sessions, interactive workshops, and unparalleled networking opportunities. If you are interested in attending this free, did I say that right? Free event, please visit notch.com/content connect. We'll put this in the show notes, notch.com/content connect. That's KNOTCH.com/content connect. Be there.
Brought to you again by the K sound.
I was going to say, they really missed something there by not having it be connect, like K-I-N-N-E-C-T or...
I don't think you could... There is a European company that has it, like content with a K, like that. I don't...
Well, I guess if it would be Notch Content Connect, it would be KKK, which is probably not the best branding look to go
You just
for.
Ruined the whole thing. I have to apologize to our friends at Notch for that. But I actually, after listening to that a couple times, I think you're better at the sponsorships. So we'll should I sound like I'm just too excited.
No, you. I think you did a great job. Okay? I think you did a great job with that readout.
I think there's too much of me in it. There's too much of my personality
too
in it.
Too much of me in
and
it.
Anytime you have too much of me in anything, it's not good. Ask my wife. She will tell you.
Okay. All right. Yep.
All right.
let's move on. Let's move on to our next story here. This
that
is
wasn't supposed to go that way.
Yeah.
Well, that was supposed to be something else.
Sorry, honey.
She doesn't listen to this anyways. She doesn't read any of my books. She does read.
I think it's mine, by the way.
She does. Yeah. She reads your books. She doesn't read my books. She only reads my newsletter to see if I'm going to say something about her.
Yeah.
But that's it. Anyways, next.
All right. Moving on here. Our next story comes from The Verge, and it is about Spotify. And this is fascinating and an experiment that I really hope works here. And so Spotify has added video learning courses in its latest experiment. Basically, the story opens up by saying Spotify's UK users are getting access to a fourth category of content to sit alongside its existing library of songs, podcasts, and audiobooks, online courses. The company is today launching a new experiment that will see video-based lessons from BBC Maestro, Skillshare, Thinkific, and Play Virtuoso made available via Spotify's apps on mobile and desktop. The experiment is running in just the UK, where there are currently no guarantees that it'll get a wider, more permanent launch. Online courses, particularly video-based ones, might feel like an odd fit for a service best known as a source of music and other audio content. But product director Mohit Jitani tells me that people are already coming to Spotify for education thanks to some podcasts, so it makes sense to experiment with offering more educational content. I think this is a fantastic move. What is your thought?
I don't know what the long-term strategy is for Spotify, but if I'm on their executive team, I'm looking right at YouTube. I'm looking at,
sure,
we are the audio. They are already the audio destination. They're becoming the
audio business professionals. Sorry.
the audio destination. I love it. It's longer every time when you do the intro.
I know.
No, seriously. So they are the leader in the audio format, I would say. Correct?
Yeah, no doubt.
And where are they going to go from here? Now, they could say, great, we'll just sit on this and we'll mature into this space, but I don't think that's where they want to go. And that's, I don't think where shareholders want to go. And they're saying, okay, where is the vast amount of money and revenue opportunities going to be at? And that's going to be around video. What makes the most sense for us to transition into that format? It would be learning courses with some of our favorite partners and try this out. And I think that what we're going to see in 5, 6, 7 years is Spotify looks a lot more like YouTube than it does with just an audio format. That's where I think they're going with this.
I think you're right. I mean, I'm a little surprised, to be honest, that they haven't, that the first sort of venture out of the gate here wasn't some sort of entertainment based platform, you know, for video, that it's learning. But I think this is an easy way for them to test the waters with video and see how, you know, the kind of engagement they get, because obviously this is not going to be, this will be much more of a desktop sort of experience than it will be a mobile experience. I think I have to figure that it's going to be, you know, the fact that you're sitting down to learn something is not going to be something that you're going to, you know, especially with the categories.
I don't know anymore.
Their categories that they talk about here are business, how to create content, and make music, get creative, learn business, and healthy living. So, okay, maybe healthy living but learn business, get creative, and make music almost certainly lends itself more to being able to do things with your hands while you're, you know, rather than holding your phone. I have to think that they're looking at that, right? Mobile experience versus a desktop or television sort of experience.
Yeah. I think it's a good move. I think the experiment will prove successful in some way, like, not unlike Krispy Kreme and McDonald's, by the way.
Which I think is a great partnership. Yeah.
Which we are not talking about, but I did not realize that Krispy Kreme had they did a 2022 test with McDonald's, and I guess it was off the hook and they sold all kinds of donuts.
That was my,
they're going to be in every, I know you talked about it. I didn't remember it though. I didn't.
Really. No. I'm just saying that was going to be my hit this week, but it wasn't my hit this week, but you're right on the money. I think it's a great match.
You know what I like? I don't know how I went from Spotify to this. I like the fact that McDonald's was going with healthier options and they just said, forget it. They just leaned into it.
Yeah.
Lean into the fact that you're not going to get anything healthy at McDonald's.
That's right.
Let's add a 6-pack of Krispy Kremes.
Yeah, exactly.
So, anyways, good for Spotify. Good for Krispy Kreme.
Yeah. They know they have a thing with their coffee and their breakfast. And so this is just an addition. It's a perfect addition.
And they're going to sell them all day, by the way.
Yeah.
You can get a Krispy Kreme any time of the day. And there's nothing like a 20-hour-old Krispy Kreme.
That's right.
Okay.
There you go. Okay. All right. Very quickly here, we'll get to our next story here, which is coming to us courtesy of a couple of places. We'll link to the show notes to two different places here. One is the Media Makers Meet, which is a website, really interesting website, by the way. And they have an article here that talks about how three surprising trends that are taking shape in print. Really, the lead of the story here is the most interesting part because it links to the second thing we'll link to, which is a Pew Research study here. And basically, the lead opens up by saying print consumption among U.S. adults was up in 2023 and is likely to continue its ascent in 2024, especially as publishers prove adept at evolving their offerings to meet the needs, interests, and behaviors of consumers who, despite leading digitally first lives, clearly value print media, making Joe tingle with excitement. So the Pew Research study then that is linked there, and of course we'll link in the show notes, also speaks to this this idea with the Pew Research Center saying basically, you know, that print is back and there's some fantastic information around how they're consuming news and other elements of this. And print is definitely, as a consumption factor, is up. What say you, Mr. Print?
I smell opportunity, Robert. I gotta tell you.
Sorry, I'm so obvious with this.
Yeah.
When we started the show 10 plus years ago, there was the largest opportunity was to build a digital audience. And that was the easiest thing to do. And people moved all their dollars around and moved away from print, and most continue to do so. If you were to ask me today, like, how do I get attention the easiest way today? Not saying it's not going to, I mean, it is pricey. If you're going to print a magazine, let's say, and ship that magazine out to your customers, it is not a cheap thing to do, but will you get their attention? Most likely you will. So and you work with probably the biggest opportunities for enterprise businesses that have loyal customer bases that they want to see increase the yield of that business. They want to keep them more loyal. They want to know, like, and trust that brand, whatever the case is. Print is maybe the best vehicle in the world for that. And I just saw this stat that says we've hit bottom. I think there's an opportunity right. for courageous brands. By the way, Lego still has their magazine going strong. Red Bull still has their magazine going strong. So Amazon's putting more into their catalog business. So's Walmart. I'm just saying, you know.
Well, I think one of the interesting things here is that, and this is represented by what you're doing with Tilt Publishing, is we forget that print technology has evolved just as fast as digital technology has. And everybody, when you think of print, you go, oh, it's expensive. It's hard. I'm going to have to run thousands of pieces, or I'm going to have to print all this stuff that's going to sit in my closet and not, you know. But no, you can do onesies and twosies now just as easily as you can. So doing a print magazine that serves 50 people is fine.
Yeah.
And so that's the kind of place that we're in now, where that print and on-demand technology, it's fast, it's easy, and it's pretty cheap, and it provides that very different kind of customer experience.
That's right. And the way that you can, if you have good, solid data, behavioral data on your customers, you can swap out stories, you can put their name in. I mean, you've got a lot of options there as well. But yeah, to your point, as you know, we're launching our book, The Content Entrepreneur, coming out. That's going to be out on April 9th. And, you know, we're finalizing all the details. It's $6 to print one. We print an amazing copy. We can, and then you can price it for however you want. Lots of flexibility for the content creator in that. And we've been able to do it so that we, in, at least in the 48 states, we're able to get free shipping because our margins are so much better than they would be normally. So yeah, to your point, lots of opportunity there. I'd love to see maybe one of these big brands that you work with or something where they're really saying, no, we're going to double down on a quarterly magazine project to this group of people, and we're going to commit to 2 to 3 years. And these are the KPIs we're looking at. I mean, that's the way we used to do it in the good old days when I started in this business almost 25 years ago. Yeah. I still think there's an opportunity there.
Well, and just to your point, a first party data perspective, the amount of first party data that you need in order to even be able to service a print consumer is so much more. And so the expectation is, yes, of course, I'm going to tell you a physical address, and I'm going to, you know, you talked about an owned media audience and the ability to, you know, ask for things like not only their physical address, but their email or their phone number or those kinds of things, because I have to be able to get this in your hands. And so the first party data there, to be able to look at things like regionality, like you can't look at regionality from an email address. But you can from a place where you're sending something. It's like, oh, we're big. And I remember there was a gym chain that had a print magazine. I'm forgetting which gym membership it was now, but it was a regional.
Fitness magazine? Go ahead. I know what you're talking about.
You know what I'm talking about, right? And one of the biggest values they got after doing a national print magazine was they said, holy smokes, we have way more subscribers in Denver, let's say, than we do anywhere else. That should be where we open our new club. And so they started getting true valuable insight from the first party data from the subscribers who were basically asking for it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think back to one of my first customers, Altair Engineering, which is like a multi-billion dollar company now, but at the time they were really small. They were having trouble getting their salespeople to get the phones answered. They were calling, yeah. They weren't getting appointments. And the whole goal with the magazine was to send it to the decision maker and to say, hey, did you get the magazine? I just sent it. And they were able to start these conversations. It could be as simple as that. And of course, that changed everything about the company. So,
yeah, fantastic stuff. All right. Now moving on to our hits and misses, where Joe and I pick a hit or a huge miss. Swing and a miss as the opening day something in marketing where we can learn a little something from their success or their fail. I'll go quickly because mine's very quick. Which is basically this is, and we'll link to this in the show notes, but Ad Age is reporting now that Comscore, which is a company, any frequent listener or viewer of this show will know that I am not the biggest Nielsen fan. He said, Nielsen being the Florida of research firms. basically, Comscore has now beaten Nielsen for MRC accreditation for TV measurement using their big data solution. And it's the article basically says Comscore has gotten media rating accreditation for a total household and average audience measurement, both in national and local TV, making the first measurement company to get the approval for big data measurement nationally on TV. This is a huge move that's not really getting a lot of coverage, especially for those of us who sort of have a passion and a history with TV and TV measurement. So it also says that Comscore is now the only measurement company currently accredited by the MRC for local TV measurement. This is a big win for Comscore. It's my hit for sure because I think I have long used Comscore data, and the way that they approach research is rigorous and good. We can have debates about TV measurement generally and how it happens, but this is a big win for them, and so it's my hit for the week.
Yeah, if you had another dog, would you name the dog Nielsen? The
answer would be no. No, because I like dogs. I mean, come on.
But if you really didn't want your dog, then you would name it Nielsen. Anyways, there's Florida and Nielsen. It's just a weird thing. Yeah. So this one is a hit. I love this example. If you're familiar with the Ryan's World channel on YouTube, Robert, are you familiar with this?
I am familiar. I'm not an aficionado, as they might say. Yeah.
So if you go to Ryan's World YouTube page, you will find, I think, 36.5 million subscribers. And I believe Ryan started as a really, really young kid, opening a lot of toy packages and doing that kind of thing.
He was the big
and
unboxing guy. Yeah.
Yeah. The unboxing guy. Well, basically, they have announced that in August, they are launching a movie called Ryan's World. And what I love about this example, Robert, is the fact that they're going direct. They're not using a movie studio to do this. They're working out their deal. There's a company they're working with, like a talent agency production team called Pocket Watch that helped them put, I talked to somebody today about this company, really interesting thing. There's things they're doing. They work with these large YouTube creators to take their IP and leverage it. And in this case, Ryan's World is taking their IP and leveraging it into this direct movie and doing kind of what Taylor Swift did they're going to 2,000 theaters directly.
It's amazing.
So yeah. I just love this. The biggest thing is I love this direct movement. And we've been talking about don't build your content house on rented land forever, but there seems to be something in the air about more and more content creators and content entrepreneurs saying, well, look, how do we go direct to the audience and get some of these middle entities out of the way so that we can get some of that data, so that we can get some of the direct revenues because it can make more sense? And good luck. We'll see how it goes. But the deal that they already have for 2,000 theaters is pretty impressive. That's a big, I mean, that's not like a 4,000 or 5,000 theater launch, like a Oppenheimer or a Barbie movie, but 2,000 is pretty good.
It's a real release. It's for sure a real release. And the interesting thing there is, and it gets back to where we talked about with print technology, we often forget that how much of every other vertical of technology has been evolved in the last 15 years, including the ability to, you know, I mean, it used to be that you had to go through a studio because studios were the only ones who could distribute at any kind of scale. They had the relationships and the technological relationships with the local theaters to actually get the, you know, cans of film into the theater. And so there was this sort of weird monopolistic relationship that they had there that just doesn't exist anymore. And so they can now go direct because it's easy to do digitally, because most theaters now have digital projection. They can actually do, I mean, they don't even have to visit the place. They can literally do it online and make a download available. Yep. And you can go direct to these and make the deals yourself through email and through Zoom meetings and all of that. And basically, it's all been disintermediated. The supply chain for getting content into local theaters is just completely democratized now. And so anybody can do this now. It's just a question of, can you actually have the skill set to go out and make, you know, what this pocket watch company seems to be able to do. It's a fascinating trend.
It almost seems similar when you and I, we talked about it a couple of times on this show, when you and I had the conversation in Singapore with the CMO of a very large CPG company. And we talked about the idea of, well, what if you bought these little media companies instead of organically starting all of them? And you almost thought this guy's head was going to fall off because it's like, you'd never heard. It's like, I can actually buy a media site. I can buy a newsletter list. I can buy a podcast. Like, yeah, you can absolutely do it. It's just, it's the thinking. And that's what I think is starting to change. And that's why I'm so excited, where it's not just always, oh, I have to go to Amazon for this, or I have to go to Spotify for this. You can, right, you actually give it some thought and say, if I went directly to my own fans and subscribers, what does that business model look like? And that's all we want, is just to ask the question strategically. That's all we're going for.
Yeah. It's a business strategy, not just a marketing tactic.
There you go.
There you go. All right. Let's get to our rants and raves here really quickly here before we wrap up this show. And our rants, this is where Joe and I go off on a little bit of a rant or a little bit of a rave that makes us feel like either we're Shohei Ohtani or we're his interpreter. Both feeling probably on the opposite sides of the spectrum right about now. Shall I go first, or do you want to go first here?
I'll go first. So here's, I have to read this because I pulled this out of a newsletter. It said, okay, so this is about Meta. Here's the announcement this week. Threads, Meta's text-based app, is testing a feature that shows scores and start times for NBA games as it tries to compete with X, formerly known as Twitter, where following live sports remains popular. Mm. So here's my rant.
Yeah.
Good for you, Meta.
Yeah.
Right. Like, I'm really, really excited that you're going out on a ledge and taking advantage of this huge opportunity that Elon Musk has given you to basically become what Twitter was and more. I would love to challenge them and say, look, you've been around long enough. You've worked out all the bugs. Now is the time that the real-time news place to get information should be Threads. You're there. I don't know what they're waiting for. Are they
right?
Like, are they waiting for Elon to take it back? But I expected Threads by this time to be the place that we get real time news, that they were there. Hey, good. We don't know what's going on with Twitter. We don't know what's going on with X. Let Elon mess it up. We're going to take that opportunity. And they have it.
Yeah.
And I don't know what they're waiting for. I really don't. So that's my commentary.
It's
great. Good for you on the NBA games. What else you got?
Right. Exactly. Right.
Yeah.
It's so funny because we didn't plan this, but mine is so similar to what you just said. Because mine is a rant on, so this week Adobe Summit is happening. Great event, especially if you love the Adobe suite of products. And it's happening in Vegas. And my colleague Kathy McKnight is there and sort of getting entertained by all the very, well, let's just say it's a bro fest there at Adobe Summit. What I'm going to rant on is not that. What I'm going to rant on is this. There's a press release, and this is a press release from Accenture, who seemingly always has a press release right around this time with Adobe. But because they're relatively close. But here's what the press release says, and we'll link this in the show notes. Just, it's like the bill with Ron DeSantis. This is like not your most entertaining read, but maybe you'll find it entertaining after this. Basically, the headline is that Accenture and Adobe are going to co-develop industry-specific generative AI solutions to accelerate marketing transformation. I don't know if you can put more buzzwords into a headline than that, but they did. They put a lot in there. Anyway, the press release basically, in a word salad, I mean, this is as word salad-y as it gets, A strategic expansion of its relationship of more than 20 years has been selected by Adobe to co-develop industry-specific solutions using Adobe Firefly, Adobe's family of creative generative AI models to help organizations create personalized content at scale and accelerate the transformation of their content supply chains. Blah, 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 blah. Basically, what this press release says is, and this just astounds me, that what this press release says is, hey, we're going to use Firefly to do some cool stuff that we're not doing yet, but we promise it's coming. It's going to be the most amazing, cool stuff that you've ever seen. And it's going to be really awesome. And if you'll just come to us and buy some stuff, we'll actually make the stuff. And if you can make the stuff, we're going to do it with Adobe and the stuff will be really awesome. That's what it says in 500 words. And it's just so ridiculous because if they're not Accenture, this is laughable, right? Like if I came out with a press release tomorrow and I said, hey, by the way, Joe, we've got a new partnership with Adobe Firefly and Adobe Firefly is going to enable us to do some cool, innovative AI stuff and make pictures. It's going to really be awesome. And you should hire me because I'll be able to do AI stuff with Firefly that nobody else can do because we're good at it. It would be so silly that I would even say something like that. But because Accenture says it and because they say it in 150 words that basically are all buzzwords, everybody goes, ooh, jazz hands. It's fantastic.
I think it was 750 words, actually. It's a very long release.
It's a very long press release, right? And it's got silly images in it. And it's like, you know, ooh, we know how to use Midjourney. We're awesome. Yay. So, I mean... it grinds my gears when I see this kind of stuff because people go, they get a lot of mileage out of this and it's basically only because it's Accenture and Adobe, I'm sure is like, yeah, fine. You want to do a release that basically says you're going to use one of our products to do some cool shit. Go for it. We don't care. And so they do that. They make a big announcement. They sponsor Adobe Summit. So they're going to pay money to Adobe anyway. So anyway,
to mention that Accenture is not a client of yours currently? Do you need to do that?
I don't need to mention that Accenture has never been a client.
I wanted this to be on the record.
They have not, nor have they ever been a client of mine. No, and probably never will be at this point. But yes.
I didn't know. I mean, you know, it's tough love, man.
It's just, you know, I mean, I like Accenture. I like Accenture and I certainly like all the moves they've made. And Droga is a great agency. Droga, by the way, is the agency that was acquired by Accenture that is part of this and the one who is actually doing this. And Droga is an amazingly creative agency. Just this is the most word salad-y bullshit press release that I've seen in some time. So
I'm reading right from it says CEO Nielsen Florida says.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah. There you go. Nielsen, Florida. That should be my doppelganger.
Nielsen Florida. Orlando, Florida. Florida.
There it is.
Says Mr. Robert Rose.
There it is. Yeah. There it is.
Anyways. All right. What else is going on? What do you got going on this
week? Well, next week you and I are out of town. We're going to be doing a special episode. So I'm going off to Chicago where I'm going to speak at the Digital Summit. Hopefully if any of you are in Chicago or going to Digital Summit, you'll make sure to say, hey,
you are speaking at Digital Summit.
I am speaking. Yes, I'm speaking at Digital Summit. I'm speaking on a shock of all shocks, AI, and how it integrates into marketing and content operations. And basically, I'm at the point now where with AI and generative AI, especially, I'm just basically saying, let's just look at it for what it is. I mean, and it's not some magical black box. It's basically just it's a thing that we can use. And so let's use it the right way. So I'm pulling back, hopefully, the covers and just demystifying a lot of it because it seems like there's so much noise out there. Let's just make it practical. Let's look at it pragmatically.
I would like to see that. I would like to see you just get rid of, just stop talking about all the stuff that everyone else is talking about. Yeah, you're going to be real.
Yeah.
That's how they're going to start. I'm going to lay it down for you.
I'm going
like Nielsen Florida would.
Right. I'm going to do my easy layup here. Yeah.
All right. Well, that's probably enough.
And you?
We're going on a little trip. I'll discuss. Right. I don't like to talk about like exactly where I'm going yet, but I will afterwards. I'll fill you in on exactly what we're going to do.
All right.
I don't know why I do that. I just but yeah, we're going on a little vacation with some friends and taking a little spring break, and I'm going to come back very refreshed. And then
I'm going to be back 2 days, and then we're launching our book, our group book, The Content Entrepreneur, which I'll talk about.
Dig it. Yeah.
I knew that you could. So I'm looking forward to it. Yeah, it'll be fun.
Fantastic. All right. Well, we will be with you next week with a special episode of This Old Marketing. So stay tuned for that. It's going to be a really good one. I think you're really going to dig this one because it's something that Joe and I have been wanting to do for a while. So it's a special episode for that. And until we see you next week, and we will see you next week, just remember, everybody, it's your story to tell. Tell it well. We'll see you next week on This Old Marketing. Hey, thanks a lot for making it this far in this week's episode, and thank you all for being a part of This Old Marketing. You can check out all the show notes of what we talked about today at thisoldmarketing.com, and it's also where you can leave us a review or a voicemail. We need those reviews and comments on whichever platform you follow us on. And if you haven't followed the podcast, please go do that and make sure you catch the latest and greatest episodes every Friday morning. We're on Apple and Spotify and all your other favorite podcatchers, of course, but we'd love it if you went over and subscribed to us on YouTube. That's right, YouTube. YouTube.com/@thisoldmarketing. We'll see you again next week, folks, with another episode of This Old Marketing.